Hello, everyone, and welcome to Straight Chilling. Each week, we watch and review a horror film for your entertainment. You can send all questions and comments to straightchillingpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to keep chilling.
Hey everybody, welcome to Straight Chilling. My name is Bob. I'll be your host for the evening, and this is episode number 79, recorded on Wednesday, September 28th, 2016, and tonight we watched Cloverfield. Before we get into the review, let me introduce everyone else at the table. First up, welcome back, our science fiction guru, Rickety Cricket.
I reject that title, even though it's true.
Rickety, tonight was your pick.
Yes, it was.
Cloverfield mm-hmm. was the movie.
Yep. That's kind of a sci-fi.
Would that be considered sci-fi?
Definitely, right?
Definitely.
Okay.
It's fiction, and science is involved. That's okay. True. I also support his non-agreement to your
science.
Titling.
Been to my
science involved.
Disagreement.
Randy and I are on the same team.
Team Straight Chilling. Next up, Drew.
Hi.
Resident serial killer.
It's been a long time.
It has been. Welcome back, sir. You.
What's Thank the body you. Count?
Since yet. We last saw you.
You up a few? Bodies, that is? No?
Yes.
Wow.
I'm just no extra, staring at Rob right now.
If no one sees me again, find Drew.
I wonder if the mic is picking up Drew staring at you.
It's pretty loud.
Podcasting is a visual medium. We all know that.
Well, the malice is definitely transmitted.
What about the America? Is that also?
Okay.
True? Next up, Randy Gandy G. Landy.
I'm a person. Hi.
Graphic
Don't
designer.
Do it. Don't you do
Graphic
it.
Graphic designer.
Don't you there do it. It. God damn it. I shouldn't have called attention to it.
Wearing. Randy, it looks like you're wearing a brand new DJ Elzebub t-shirt, which was designed by you graphically.
That was illustrated
that's
by
a,
me.
Ooh, okay. That's okay. A photograph.
This is it.
Randy's not a photographer, Rob.
Look. I mean, it's not technically possible to photograph DJ Elzebub.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Why he's not in any of our photos, of course.
It's true.
Cameras break.
I see.
Eyes bleed, that sort of thing.
Heads explode.
Classic.
Yeah. You bend to his will. Next up, ice cream aficionado himself, Juice in the house.
What up?
Hey, dog.
How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing good.
So, hit us with the latest screaming and creaming.
Well, I tried to get a custom screaming and creaming going on tonight. I picked up some candy corn M&Ms.
Do you want some help with this one?
Yes. I was thinking candy cane. I was like, nope, that is the wrong holiday.
We have talked about this multiple times today, and you had no trouble.
Candy corn M&Ms. And I was hoping that our local Dreamette would mix them in for me, but apparently that's some kind of bullshit health hazard, so they wouldn't do that. So I
we need to do our own Brexit, am I right?
So I went with the cake batter, which was actually really delightful because it was like I was eating ice cream and cake minus the carbs
and candy corn.
I didn't eat any of the candy corns. I'm still minus trying to the, work a way
do,
out
do you, do you is that what you You think it's carb-free?
Yes.
Okay.
With since the cake.
I'm going to let him have his thing. I'm just going to let him have
cutting,
this one.
Cutting
guys.
The bread out of that one, you know. Low-carb ice cream.
It's without the cake carbs.
Yeah. See?
Yes.
So, yeah, it was awesome.
It was glorious.
It was actually really good.
Well, damn them for not mixing in those candy corn M&Ms.
No.
Thrilling tale.
I'm upset for you. Also, highly recommended white chocolate candy corn M&Ms. If they're not in your mouth, get them, put them there.
They're
you
delicious.
Won't regret it.
You got to understand, like, from their position, like, how do they know that the candy corn M&Ms are fresh? So,
oh, it's true.
You
it's
can't
true.
Tell.
Freshly mean, grown.
Are they still
I mean, they only use
the dew of the
freshest
night?
Ingredients. That's fair. That is fair.
They are in season, so.
With the standard 1980s graphic pattern solo cup, they have their name written all over it. They don't want to put their name on a non-fresh product.
I did plant the idea in their heads. They're like, what are you trying to mix in? I was like, look, it's Halloween season. There are these candy corn M&Ms. You make an M&M shake anyways. Maybe you should invest for the month.
They're like, here's a cup of vanilla ice cream. Yeah. Take it home.
Crush it up.
Stash it up.
Swirl it around.
Pour it into a different cup.
No, I want it to be part of my cream.
What is this, London?
Do I own a petal or
no, a mortal and pestle?
Mortal, yeah.
Mortal, a mortal and pestle.
Mortal and pestle. No. Blended immortal into petal.
That's DJ Elzebub style right there.
He's a good demon.
He is.
We're so off right now. Let's roll on.
Tangents.
All right, a few things of note, per usual. One more time, I just wanted to remind everybody that our Podomatic account is about to be canceled. We got our hosting coming through SoundCloud now, so if you go directly to Podomatic to get our website, or to get our latest episodes, just switch over to SoundCloud and you'll be good to go. The episodes will still be coming through iTunes, Stitcher, and they'll be posted to our website regularly. Per usual. Speaking of which, we have a brand new website, if you are unaware, straightchillingpodcast.com. Check that out. It'll be updated weekly with various articles, lists, reviews, and of course, like I mentioned before, brand new podcast episodes. And most recently, we decided that we are all going to be checking out Spooky Empire in Orlando on October 8th.
Yes.
We are going to do it.
We're doing it.
Yes.
A fraction of us are going to do it.
That is true. Justin, Randy, and myself, to be more specific, will be in Orlando Saturday, October 8th, hanging out all day, walking around, checking stuff out.
Hopefully hanging out with Weird Al.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah, that is the plan for me.
I'm going to take a body shot off of him, personally. That's my goal.
No, you're not.
I'm going to do it.
No, you're not.
Oh,
that's an extra.
Do
happening.
You mean that he's going to punch spot. You in your body? Because I believe that.
I hope to get arrested. That's my
he's
goal.
He's a pacifist, but in your case, I don't know.
He is a god among men. But I'm going to have my Straight Chilling shirt on for sure. If you see us, you want to say, hey, don't be a stranger. Do it. We'll give you love, stickers, business cards, handshakes, all the above.
Body shots, maybe. But,
yeah, we're. I'll just we lay will down let you wherever punch you find Rob. Me.
If you come up to us in public at Spooky Empire, we will all stand there as you punch Rob in the gut.
And I'll let you film it.
Yeah, put it on Vine.
See if
do
we
people
can get
Vine
a,
anymore.
Can we get a montage of gut punches? Is that possible?
Yes, please.
Let's do it. But let us carry on with the show. First up, as usual, let's go ahead and get into what we've been watching this week.
Hey, gang, what you been watching?
Riggedy, what have you been watching?
I watched a Netflix original film. You may have seen it advertised on the application if you own it. It's called ARQ, A-R-Q. It is a sci-fi drama film about a time loop Groundhog Day essentially kind of a deal. It's real solid, highly recommend. It's about this couple that kind of goes through their day as it repeats over and over again, and it has to do with a perpetual motion machine, which is super nerdy and awesome, and how they explain how it kind of warps time. It has Rachel Taylor, who is the hot chick from the first Transformers film, the Australian chick who says things real with a real thick Australian accent, and then Robbie Amell, who's been in various things, like he was a superhero in that Legends of Tomorrow show, which none of you have seen. He was in Tomorrow People, which none of you have seen. So, for those of you who are geeky like myself, you will know who he is. So it's solid. It's actually a pretty good drama about based on that, and there's some twists and turns, and there's a few twists and turns, and it's kind of puzzle-y. Everyone kind of eventually learns they're in a loop, and everyone starts to kind of like figure out how to get out.
This is a movie or a?
This
show?
Is a movie. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Like I said, it's kind of Groundhog Day. It's about the day repeats kind of a deal, and people kind of figure out that it's happening one at a time, and a drama ensues and there's some twists and turns and stuff. So definitely recommend. My brother and I had a great time watching it.
Cool. You said that's a Netflix original?
Netflix Orige. Yep.
Sweet. Check it out.
Arc. It's up right now. Yep.
Drew, what you been watching?
I actually quit my job.
So you've been watching a lot.
This week is the first week I've had without going to my 8-to-5 cubicle job.
It's because all that straight chilling money's coming in.
That's right.
It's the first to do so.
Drew's been siphoning off a little here and there.
Damn it, Drew!
In Monday, I went to the movie theater in the middle of the day, and I watched what you guys talked about last episode, I think it was.
Blair Witch.
Yeah. Yes. So that's pretty much it. I haven't been watching a lot of TV.
Did you like it?
Out of 5, what do you think you would have given it?
Pay to see it.
No. I'm still working at the movie theater. So.
Okay.
All right.
10-4.
I'm just picking up more shifts there now that I'm not working at my other job.
All right.
The out of 5, I don't know. 3.
Okay. Yeah.
2.5.
Yeah.
I thought it was just solid production, pretty much the same as the first.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know, a polished version of the first movie.
Revamp.
That's kind of where we were at with it.
Yeah. It's wasn't great.
Yeah.
Not that I was expecting too much from it either.
But. Would you recommend people go to the movies to check it out?
Not if they're looking to be surprised.
I don't know. So I mean, it's a soft no. I guess.
It's an answer.
It is an answer.
Soft no.
By definition.
Well, all right.
Do you remember what your aggregate was?
2.5, actually.
2.5?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right down the middle. Randy Gandy, what you been watching?
Hi. I've been watching more things than usual this week, but one that sticks out for me was recommended by John Hodgman of Judge John Hodgman fame, and also the PC in the Mac and PC commercials some years
and
back.
And he's also in Bored to Death, the canceled HBO show, which is great.
He's terrific in Bored to Death.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, but I love him. His podcast is fantastic. Listen to it. It's very comedic. And he mentioned this... this made-for-TV sort of like mini-series movie. It's a 2-part mini-series, so it's about 3 hours long. Over the course of the week, I watched it. It's called Intensity. It's adapted from a Dean Koontz novel, and I was not really I would not have been interested in, except for the fact that it's basically about a woman who's, you know, trying to save a little girl from a murderer, so to speak. Like she winds up being an accidental hero. And the murderer, the reason that I was interested in it was that the murderer is John C. McGinley, also known as Dr. Cox from Scrubs. And I could just see that. I was like, that's going to be fucking amazing to watch. And it was. Like, it was, I don't know that it was like overall, it was pretty dated. It definitely had some like TV level effects for the time. So it was like 91, I think. It's 97. So maybe a little behind the times. But... John C. McGinley is so fucking fun to watch. He's just this unrepentant piece of shit killer, and he just talks it up, and I don't know, it's so much fun to watch. I had a good time with it. I would recommend it, but it's not something you have to sit down and watch. Throw it on while you're working, you know, folding laundry or something. It's a little bit of a commitment at its timestamp, but it's all on YouTube, free. So if you just want to throw something on, you know, for white noise, you could make worse choices.
Right on. I just imagine him being very quippy the whole time.
He's not really. Like, he doesn't really make jokes necessarily. He really commits to the idea, but one of the things that, and John Hodgman pointed this moment out, which I thought was great, was, like, he's got this woman tied up in the other room, like, on chains. He's got a little girl, like in his basement. And he's murdered like 6 people at this point. And he calls in to his coworker and he's like, yeah, you know, I just got back in from my vacation. I don't know if I can make it in today. And they make jokes back and forth. He hangs up and he goes, nice guy. There's just something about like how casual he is about everything. At one point he goes to the lead actress. He's like, look, I'm going to kill you either way. You can either play ball with me and get some food, or I'll just take you apart piece by piece or some shit like that.
Damn.
It was pretty grim in that respect. He did a great job. And, like, the acting was questionable at some points overall, mm-hmm. but he nailed it. I really enjoyed it.
That's Dr. all. Cox killing folks. Check it out. Juice, what you been watching?
This weekend I watched There Will Be Blood for the first time. It is not a horror film. It is a 2000 film starring Mr. Daniel Day-Lewis. And I was curious just because that man can act his damn ass off. And it was on Netflix. So I watched it. And pretty much that man can act his damn ass off. And that's pretty much that movie.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, this dude's fucking impressive. The movie itself is kind of weird. It wasn't what I was expecting. I guess I expected more conflict between the religious figure in the film and Daniel Day-Lewis's character, which isn't really what it amounted to for a majority of the film. So it played a little more straightforward than I thought, but still, Daniel Day-Lewis is the fucking man, and that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie since it first came out, but I remember when it was over, there were like maybe three scenes that I felt like you really needed to see, and then the other like 2 hours of the movie just kind of like drug on a little bit.
Yeah, it's just kind of like bridgeways until like the last scene, and you're like, oh
yeah,
you know, pretty much until Daniel Day-Lewis has to deliver this amazing dialogue for this amazing character,
and then there's blood
and there's some blood
and there's also some ice cream in the end.
The title promised blood, so
it delivered.
It's about an oil baron and this religious kid, kind of.
There will be oil.
Yeah, so but yeah, I watched that this weekend, and it was fine.
Yeah, the dog hated it.
Yes.
Not a fan of Daniel Day-Lewis.
He fell asleep.
I watched a 2007 French horror film this week called Inside.
I watched that with you.
Yeah, you did. It was great. I highly recommend it. Just a quick spoiler-free synopsis of it. There's basically the film opens up. There's this pregnant woman who's driving in a car with her husband. And she gets in a horrible car accident, and her husband doesn't make it. And she gets sent home with a clean bill of health. She's still pregnant with her baby, and a strange character shows up at her house a couple months later, and just kind of starts tormenting her, and you're not quite sure who this person is, or you know what they want, what they're after, and it just very quickly spirals out of control. And a few other characters introduced later in the film, and it's very brutal. It's part of the new French extremity wave, which I'm sort of new to, but I definitely recommend this movie. I usually don't go for like the more brutal horror films, but this one in particular seemed to be delivered with a lot of like style and substance. It wasn't just like brutality for brutality's sake. There was a lot behind it, and it seemed to be handled with, you know, care and with a certain amount of, I don't know, art. It was a, I don't know, just a very well-made movie.
Can I just say,
yeah,
let me emphasize the brutality of this movie.
Yes,
because it is maybe, I still can't think of a movie that I've seen that was more troubling in terms of the kind of violence you see.
Good Lord.
Compared to the actual plot and like the amount that you give a shit. Because there's probably worse brutality in like Hostel, but nobody gives a shit about the characters
right,
in that movie. And obviously like Evil Dead and like none of those people, like, you know, the brutality exists, but in this they play it straight, and they play it in probably one of the more effective, horrifying responses that I've ever had to a movie. Like it was pretty amazing in that
effective
respect. And like Rob said, I agree that there's something deeper than just torture porn in it.
Yeah, it's
they play for kids, huh?
They do.
They go all the way with it.
Like, you know,
they're going the distance.
There is a lot of brutality in this, but I would absolutely not call this torture porn.
No.
I don't know, it's just
the, like, if taken strictly as like a bullet pointed list of things that happen, you'd be forgiven for mistaking it as that.
Yeah.
But it's written. It's not just an excuse for things to happen. Anyway.
And it also takes place around Christmas time. So
Christmas trams.
Christmas tram.
Some beard in your teeth, I think.
Sorry about that. It's getting out of control. That takes care of what we've been watching this week. Drew, will you do me the honors and tell me what the hell Cloverfield is about?
What's on the back of the box?
Okay.
Thanks.
As a group of New Yorkers enjoy a going-away party, little do they know that they will soon face the most terrifying night of their lives. A creature the size of a skyscraper depends upon the city, leaving death and destruction in its wake. Using a handheld video camera, the friends record their struggle to survive as New York crumbles around them.
Bummer.
There you go.
Monster film.
Yes, sir.
Tearing some shit apart. So we had all seen this before, right?
Yeah.
Yes, correct. Right.
And we obviously had seen 10 Cloverfield Lane recently because we did an episode on it. So this movie was sort of fresh on the brain.
It's what inspired me to choose it.
Right on.
Yep.
We got the whole franchise.
Yeah, both. Both films.
The complete catalog. Full catalog.
Did everybody go through all the viral marketing?
This film the comic books and the last 15 minutes of the second film.
Yes.
So, Rickety, you are the sci-fi guy. This movie.
That's what you say.
Yes. That's what you continue to prove.
You say.
Well, we did watch a sci-fi film.
Yeah.
Why are you drawn to this film? What are some things that you like about it? Why do you I assume that you do recommend since you chose it? Why do you recommend?
Certainly. I mean, you know, I watched this movie when it came out in theaters. It was, you know, mid college, yada yada. It was. I mean, now we know a little bit more about what's going on with the newest movie, but at the time, it was just a monster movie, and you didn't really know much about it. And I loved it. It was, at the time, also, you know, like POV, or not POV.
Handycam.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Handycam type footage was at its peak. Not to mention, this is a J.J. Abrams film, so at the time we didn't know it, but it was going to be good no matter what, because J.J. was relatively new to Hollywood, at least in
his notoriety was building at the time.
This was his first feature, right?
I can remember. Yeah, I mean, this was probably
he
peak
had like,
Lost too.
Yeah,
he directed Mission Impossible 3 before this movie.
Oh shit!
And
before
wrote,
producing
I think,
this one,
yeah, and like Nikita, there's like some random TV shows.
Anyways. Oh yeah, he did a lot of TV.
Alias. Yeah, Alias. That's what I'm thinking.
That was one. That's,
yeah.
I forgot about that.
Anywho, we didn't know at the time, but you know, he did a great job. The monsters were great. It's I think we talked about it a little bit. It's Godzilla for the new generation. It's Godzilla with heart, excluding the newest Godzilla. But yeah, I loved it at the time. I thought it was great. You know, I honestly hadn't seen it maybe once since then, so I figured it would be good to watch it again.
Yeah. Drew, you know, what are your thoughts on this movie? Is it something that's sort of in your wheelhouse? Is it something that you would recommend people check out?
Yeah, definitely. It's unfortunate now that someone who hasn't seen the movie will not be able to see it in a movie theater, most likely. I mean,
true.
Some random theaters might play it in a one-night thing, but and if that does come up near you, you should definitely check it out. But like this is the first time I've watched it since the movie theater. I've never attempted watching it at home, and it's definitely a lot less effective, especially without surround sound, you know.
Yeah, we found that out tonight.
Yeah, but I think if it's your first time seeing it, you still enjoy it.
Yeah, I think so too.
And even if not,
still watch it. Even if you think you're gonna hate it, watch it. Randy, what about you? Would you recommend?
Oh yeah, I was really huge into this movie when it was first coming out because I mean, I was a huge Lost fanatic, as you know.
Oh yes.
And this was probably right around peak Lost time, so when I saw that JJ was coming out with a film, but not only that, but it was a monster film. Not only that, it was kept in immense secrecy for the like duration of its pre-release. I was completely into it. There was an alternate reality game back when that was considered a good thing. And this is the, like, to my knowledge, the first big scale found footage movie. Like, you had your Blair Witches, you had a few things like that, but like, I mean, I may be forgetting one, forgive me if I am, but this is the first one that I saw that would, like, this had a budget. They, like, pulled out all the stops for set pieces. This was an effects fucking powerhouse when it came out. And I mean, like Drew said, watching it in the theaters, and it's hard to compare it to other films. I would compare it a little bit maybe to Hardcore Henry, because of, like, again, that's the same sort of, like, fast-paced, action-based point of view, but it's sort of the same feel. It's engrossing in a way.
Paranormal Activity was a year before, or a year after. So, no, a year before. Yes.
A year before?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Wow, Activity came out before this.
Yep. Huh. I would not have guessed that. Yeah.
Cloverfield was a year after.
Wow.
So. Cloverfield definitely had a bigger budget, for sure.
Oh, for sure.
Definitely. And that just supports his point, though.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Cloverfield is this huge.
Those are, like, the three found. I would put this movie in a triad with those other two in terms of making the genre what it is today, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
But, like, they really pulled out all the stops, like, just from the first trailer of this movie, seeing the Statue of Liberty's head fly across fucking Manhattan. I was like, this is going to be a huge fucking momentous sort of feeling watching this thing. Mm-hmm. And it's not a perfect movie, don't get me wrong. Like, there's problems that we'll get into, but I think it's definitely worth a look. And it's certainly as I was saying during the movie, it was filmed and created in a very specific time in the history of technology over the last few years. It was just pre-smartphones. Mm-hmm. So there's a weird sort of, like, technology gap that exists.
The razor era.
The Lohan era.
TM. Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, I really love it. And, you know, it's, I mean, I am the demographic for it too. So, mm-hmm. You know, good for me.
Juice, how do you feel? Would you recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. This is, like, a quintessential, like, monster movie of its type. I mean, it's the way it's handled. We were saying today it's about 10 years old now, and the effects still hold up really well. Of course, the way they designed it to where, you know, you only get glimpses of the monster and stuff like that, so it's not, like, you know, just straight up revealed to you. It kind of helps that along. Because you only get bits and pieces. You hardly ever get just a lot of straight up shots. But it holds up really well. And just a movie of this scale, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you had mentioned, like, the Godzilla of its time. You know, it's just the typical New York getting destroyed type of a movie. But mm-hmm. it's got a lot behind it. And I definitely would recommend it for sure.
All right. I definitely recommend too. It is, I mean, just off the top of the dome, like Randy mentioned, I think this is probably, like, the biggest budget found footage movie that I can think of, because generally the whole point of making a found footage movie is you can do it on the cheap. Like, that's sort of the point almost. So it's sort of almost in its own category, but I think it's done to great effect. And it is kind of like the modern day Godzilla movie. You know, it also makes me think of, for whatever reason, Jason Takes Manhattan, like, if they had money when they made that movie.
If it wasn't exclusively on a boat the whole time.
Exactly. if they actually got to, like, include, Madison Square Garden or, like, Central Park or the, you know, Statue of Liberty or what have you, like, they included in this movie, I feel like it would have been, like, that cool. Obviously, like, you know, he's not going to go destroy the Statue of Liberty or anything, but
why not? I don't know.
You're right.
Honestly, that's a rant for another day. I can't get into that movie right now.
Rant indeed.
That's a stretch there, Bob. That's a stretch.
I don't know.
That's a loose connection.
I agree.
The budget.
Same city, period.
Except Jason never actually goes to fucking New York.
So it's just a giant alien monster.
The implication of the title.
Crapping out Beatles.
This movie reminds me very much of Arthur.
This is the budgetary difference is maybe think of it. Anyways, everybody recommends this movie. If you haven't seen it for whatever reason, definitely check it out. It's worth your time. Let me go ahead and drop the spoiler warning real quick, and then we can get into the nitty gritty.
Spoiler warning.
All right. Cloverfield. Basically, we get some characters established first thing in this movie. There's a main character, Rob, and his lady friend, Beth. I guess they are early established that they have some sort of romantic relationship in the movie. And Rob has a going away party. He's going to move to Tokyo for a job opportunity. And at this point, we are introduced to a character named Hud, who has been charged with walking around and videotaping these sort of confessionals at his going away party from all of his friends. They're just supposed to say a little something into the camera. And Hud, who was played by TJ Miller from Silicon Valley fame.
Mm-hmm. Important to mention.
And Deadpool.
And yeah, that's right. Yeah, and Deadpool. Deadpool. Forgot he was in that. He's hilarious.
Yeah.
Sort of the comedic relief of this movie. And then we're also introduced to Rob's brother, whom I forget his name.
I do too.
No, none of that matters. And then another woman. I don't remember her name either.
And another
Marlena.
Woman.
Are you talking about Lizzie Kaplan's character?
Yeah, yeah, from Party Down fame. Yeah.
Jason is the brother. Marlena is
Masters
the
of Sex.
Crush of TJ Miller, no aka way. Hud.
And then there's the brother's girlfriend who...
Lily.
Lily is with Lily, them yes. most of the time as well.
Right. So they're sort of in the middle of this going away party. And I guess Beth shows up with a man friend, and Rob is somewhat not chill with that. And he goes out on the balcony with his brother, who is decidedly a huge douchebag, because they're having this like one-on-one conversation. His brother's basically just telling him that he sucks and that he's not good enough for this girl. And in the middle of this intimate conversation...
Harsh.
Yeah,
I don't know why they played it that
like,
way.
Unnecessarily
I think they were
trying
brutal. To make it humorous, like you know, yeah, you give your bro shit sort of thing, but this is like,
yeah,
like for the emotional weight that they wanted to put on it, that kind of undercuts that.
Yeah, I was just about to say, for what happens to this character, that really detracts from that, because you're like, oh, thank God.
You really want, like as a writer, as you know, the filmmaker, you want the connection to be built, and they spend about 5 minutes of dialogue where his brother's telling him, no, you kind of suck, and she's awesome, so of course you're not together.
What a shitty brother.
Like maybe that was had the intention of like angering us into believing in them as a couple. I don't know, but it didn't really do that.
Nah.
It really just made us think, what a prick this guy is.
Yeah.
Honestly, none of these characters hold much weight. Except
true.
Yeah.
For that is
Hud.
Very true.
Hud is the only one that holds really any kind of substantial weight.
He's like essentially the narrator.
Yeah. We could not remember most of these people's names. They don't add anything. Like Lily adds nothing other than she's there and she kind of calms the main character down sometimes.
Yeah.
They look like a non-threatening, racially diverse cast of a WB show.
Yeah.
That's a slam dunk.
Yeah.
That's what that looks like.
Yep. That's what they are.
I don't know. I give them a little bit more credit than that, I think. Like they
and racially diverse, there's one woman of color.
They are that. That is factual.
But the WB way, I believe.
They try and build something of an emotional connection for them with the audience. And I think it plays just enough to where you're like, okay, I don't want him to die, really. You know, I guess I'm pulling for him. But a lot of that has to do also with just the sheer immersion of feeling like you're there, at least for me. And TJ Miller, like, he's not only the comic relief, he is the narrator, basically. He's seeing all this shit. He's pretty much asking the questions that the audience needs to ask or wants to ask and things like that. But he's also has that same found footage... Not a mistake, but like
it's the downfall. It's like, why the hell are you still holding onto a camera?
It's that question. Why are you still filming? And the one they gave, the answer they gave in this was the same as Blair Witch, which is, I'm too scared to do anything else, which only goes so far. Like, I can accept that in one movie, I don't know if I could accept it in two movies as something plausible.
This one highlights it too much. Yeah. There's specific times where it is dropped and they're running from like monsters or something and would easily be left behind immediately.
Or at least as his arms go back and forth as he's running.
He's still holding it to his face.
He's
and
climbing
running
downstairs
from
with two hands on a camera.
Getting the shot.
Going, oh shit, oh shit. Getting the shot, yeah. This movie does have a lot of these shots are great and they're really cool and it's clearly it's blocked out very intentionally, but it also suffers from that same thing that we talked about with Blair Witch, not the Blair Witch Project, which is that it feels like there's a cinematographer behind the camera.
Yeah,
someone this is a man down. Who just picked up the camera for the first time.
Yeah, the meshes of the two styles don't. You see the edges. It's not smooth.
Yeah.
You see the lines where it's like, okay, this is a Hollywood movie with a shtick of this other subgenre, if you will. So it's certainly not smooth in that way. And I would say almost maybe this is the peak and also the beginning of the downfall of it, because they kind of did take it to that. It's like, okay, we've seen what a low budget one looks like. Okay, let's do it big and do a cinematic. And then you see those lines, you see those edges, and you're like, okay, this has been done now. Like, why the hell are you still holding a camera?
There's something lost with that bigness. But at the same time, the great things about this movie are some of those grandiose shots and some of those
absolutely
the things that make you engrossed, that they still exist, the things that pull you in, they still exist. They're just if you look at it too long, it's like, oh, I know why X person is at that point of the frame and when they're gonna come forward any minute now, or things like that. You can kind of see those things as if they're on track, you know what I mean? So I don't know, that was a big thing. Anyway, but with the plot, so basically there's some emotional conflict between an ex-girlfriend and our lead actor. Hud, the videographer, is in love with Lizzie Kaplan, justifiably so. And they all fucking pretty much just experience the apocalypse together.
Yeah, while Rob's in the middle of being told that he's a piece of shit from his brother, basically they're on the balcony outside and you just see buildings start exploding in the background, and then the Statue of Liberty's head gets knocked off and rolls down the street and smashes a bunch of cars, and they're just thrown into the middle of the end of the world pretty much, and they try to survive and navigate their way through it.
I don't know that there's that, just that shot of the Statue of Liberty's head or whatever is so impactful, more so than actually seeing the monster, which is something you brought up when you were deciding whether or not to recommend it. But I think they kind of money shot the monster too much in this movie.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, I really like seeing the monster because it's okay, mystery solved sort of thing, but it also kind of takes away that edge of mystique to it. I'm a little torn about that, I guess. I feel like it, especially towards the end, there's a shot that really shows off this thing. And I don't know that it was for the better. It almost, it's supposed to be an insane melee that you're just thrust into. And there's a few times where it's like a still shot of this monster and right in the face. I don't know.
I feel
that
they kind of, they found a pretty decent happy medium. Maybe they could have done a little less, but I feel like they kind of delivered on the monster aspect, but they took their time getting there, and they didn't shove it in your face right from the get-go. And the effects hold up.
Yeah,
they still look good.
They still do look good.
They never give you the full picture. They give you the feet, and then they give you the top shot, and they give you the facial, but they never give you the full wide facial angle. This is it,
I kind of feel like that
from
last
feet
shot
to
of
head,
it
this
is
it.
That.
You just kind of get a facial. Yeah,
you don't get 100% of
you have
the
to
body,
piece it together.
You stare it in the eyes and see how it
you
breathes.
Have to piece it together as a whole from what you've seen before.
You never see it from the furthest out where you can see every... You can see from the head to the tail, and you know what the body structure is like.
You never see that. You never see it all on screen at once, but how often do you see an entire
human being? That's what he's saying. You have to like piece it together. Sure. Like, it's not like Godzilla, where you're like, that's a lizard. Like, and this thing, you see from
toe to head.
Yeah, it's not like a typical animal type thing. Like, it's weird.
I just feel like up till maybe the halfway or maybe the third act, up until the third act, I think it was handled way more gracefully, where you're seeing like a tail.
I would agree.
Maybe you see like a blurry face in the distance, sort of thing, and then you see something moving through the smoke. That's way more effective in terms of terror for me than turning around and oh shit, literally it's on top of me, and you know, like. I can see, like, literally, you see the way it breathes, and you see it, like, the light in its eyes and shit like that. And I don't know. I just, to me, it was a little above and beyond what they needed to do to make it effective. Or not above and beyond. It just was beyond what they needed to do.
Yeah. I, on a level, I agree with you, but I think the studio / director / whatever took the safe approach and just kind of gave it to you. You know what I mean?
Like, it was the safe
just
approach.
Kinda, yeah. Especially for the time. Just kind of satisfied your every curiosity. Here it is. Mm-hmm. Watch it fucking eat you. And kind of a deal.
In their defense, like we've been saying, it does look great. So they didn't like ruin it by showing you a shitty monster. They showed you a good-looking monster.
Yeah.
But the suggestion of a monster is way more terrifying to me. That's why, like, I mean, that's the whole Jaws theory.
This whole movie is... the monster, though. Like, there's not a whole lot to, like, latch on character-wise or story-wise. Like, Jaws, there was a lot more there character-wise, for sure. Definitely. Like, a ton more. But, like, this movie, if they just kind of, like, hinted at a monster, kind of like... That was sort of my beef with, like, the most recent Gareth Edwards Godzilla movie, is, like, there wasn't a whole lot of monster and there wasn't a whole lot of character, so the movie just kind of fell a little flat for me. So, like, if they didn't give you the monster or the character in this movie, I feel like I would have felt the same, but I kind of prefer this to the more recent Godzilla movie because they do deliver on the monster aspect, even when the characters kind of fall flat a little bit.
See, I think, to me, the thing that sells this movie to me is... just the level of involvement you feel as a viewer because of the style of filmmaking, especially like we said in the theater, like it's a huge thing. And I mean, the suggestion of something terrifying is way more terrifying than staring it in the face a lot of times, at least in cinematically speaking. So I think the combination of, you know, suggestions of terror and this particular kind of filmmaking, like that would have made it that much better of a movie in my eyes. The characters, like we said, like they do just enough to make you like interested, but really what you're interested in is like you feel like you're reacting to things, and that's what I think sells it to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I see where you're coming from with it, and generally I would agree, but you got to make up for the lack of monster with something else that sort of pulls me in and kind of grounds me. And I don't know that the characters did enough. I really do like TJ Miller's character. I think he's really funny, but I don't think that would be enough. Like him as the narrator would be enough to really ground me in this movie. So, I mean, I appreciate that they really do give you the monster eventually, even though I guess it's not like a full shot. And I don't know. That's sort of why this movie works for me, I think.
Yeah. So, personally. I mean, we kind of glossed over a lot here too. And
sure.
But really, there's not a lot to say about the individual relationships, but we can tell you about the deaths. Let's just go through that.
The movie's 8 years old, so yeah. I mean, if you haven't seen it.
Just when they go on the subway, it's probably my favorite part of the movie.
The first, well, if we're going by deaths, one of the first major big ones is...
Brooklyn Bridge.
Shit's going down, so of course, they're in Manhattan, they're gonna go across the Brooklyn Bridge, and this fucking big old tentacle, or like arm, comes swinging out of the air, boom, right on the bridge. It's a big epic scene, and Rob's brother is the first one to get the axe.
Man, we see him get crushed.
Crushed.
No one cares.
Right in front of the camera, smashed down.
He's a douchebag. No one cares.
That was great because it really set the scale off. I remember seeing some sort of thing either on Reddit or somewhere on the internet comparing sizes of movie monsters, and the Cloverfield monster for the time was by far the biggest.
Yeah.
Like it was really, really huge. Mm. by comparison to, like, you know, classic Godzilla and things like that.
Was it huge? This,
huh?
Was it huge?
No, no, it wasn't.
okay.
So, yeah, I don't...
Yeah, this...
Go ahead.
Oh, I thought Drew was
doing
say.
Donald Trump hand motions.
Oh.
The mic doesn't pick that up, yes. Drew.
I wasn't doing it for this.
Podcasting, a visual medium, brought to you by Straight Chilling.
The second death was the explosion from the tunnel bite. Is that the second death?
I think so.
Explosion? Yeah,
yeah, so, Marlena. Or, yeah. Yeah, Marlena explodes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they go into the tunnels. Yeah, and this monster has little parasite monsters that, mm-hmm. like, fall off of it, and they kind of look like the smaller versions of the Starship Trooper ants.
Bugs.
Yeah,
yeah, bugs. They called them the bugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the big snappers.
And this is not an original thought. Somebody brought this up at one point with me, and I think they're right that, you know, like you said, they're parasites.
Yeah.
I think they were designed very obviously after, like, fleas.
Yeah,
like mm-hmm. in size comparison, it would make at least a level of sense. But also, they've got the flat, very vertical bodies,
mm-hmm.
And their jaws and everything are really kind of geared towards that. But they've got these insane little, like, claws and shit. It is a scary fucking thing. The way they introduce them is scary.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, stuff's falling. It's like through three different screens. It's like the news reporter is reporting it, and then TJ Miller is watching it through that in a convenience store, you know, screen, and then it's coming through his camera or whatever. So it's coming from the reporter's camera into the television into TJ Miller's camera that you're, like, watching this happen.
Well, I meant in particular, like, how, like, this is while they're in the tunnels. They're walking through subway tunnels.
Well, the first time you see them is
true.
That
I had
scene,
forgotten
yeah.
about that. But the way you're the characters are physically introduced to them is by you're walking down this dark fucking tunnel using only the light from the camera, which is a good way to keep a reason to keep a camera around.
Yeah.
At least for that moment. And they're like, whoa, they keep hearing something. They turn around, they turn on the night vision, and as they get the night vision working, you can see them crawling on the ceiling behind them, looking at them with their eyes. And I thought that was fucking great. Like, it was just a really effect. Like, I mean, you could kind of feel it coming, I feel like, a little bit.
Yeah,
like the way they were playing that shot. That's again one of those, like, you could tell cinematically that makes sense that they would be there.
And they lead up to it with the all the rats in the subway are just hauling ass in the same direction.
Follow the rats.
You gotta follow the rats. Yeah, that's definitely my favorite scene. Marlena gets gnawed on, and then they eventually, like,
she gets bit pretty hard, but she also beats the shit out of one of those things.
I think you mentioned, Rainey, at this point in the movie, they would all die. They would not make it past this point.
Those things were fast as fuck. Yeah. They can see in the dark, and, like, they're having exoskeletons. So what are you supposed to do exactly?
Yeah, you're done.
You guys,
I'm surprised there was only one bite.
That would have been the end of the film in real life.
They were jumped by a small squadron.
And then they saw
three
this
bugs.
Is like, sorry, go ahead. One of the things that bothers me in this movie, inconsistency wise, like, maybe movie mistake, I don't know if it's quite that bad, but it's like they don't really run anywhere. They fight and Marlena gets bitten, and then all of a sudden they just find a break room like with like that they can hole up in for a while. It just, like, they're not at a station or anything. Why is there a break room in this middle of this fucking darkened tunnel?
You don't know how they work, Ganna.
That's true. Also, the lights work down there, but not anywhere else in the city.
Who knows?
Emergency lights, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
So they leave the break room and they find this, like, little military outpost that they made in, like, a mall or something.
Like, yeah,
like some sort of store. Yeah, and They're like wheeling in all these people on gurneys, and they're, you know, bleeding out, and it's horrific. And then Marlena starts bleeding from her eyeballs and just says, "I don't feel very good." And they
spot on.
Thanks,
Lizzie,
man.
Kaplan.
I've been working on it. They, like, run her into this little room that they, it's basically like a tent, and you just see, like, her silhouette explode.
Yeah,
barely in time.
Yeah,
she gains a lot of weight real quick and explodes.
Yes, she does.
That bite that she had, like, I liked the way they did that effect too. They show her, like, wound before that particular thing happens, but after she got bit, and it's like it's pretty cool, I think, because it shows, like, a pattern, like a tooth pattern that's totally alien.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just thought it was cool. Anyway, but
yeah. after that, they're trying to find Rob's pseudo GF. They're like, they eventually find her her apartment building, which is this like some like the 40th floor of this massive building. It's next to Central Park, and it is like leaning against another building. So they decide to climb up the adjacent building and hop onto the roof and try and enter the building that way to go save her.
That'd be nah.
No, thank you.
Yeah, nah. You only do that for family.
Ross, you said yeah.
Close,
you said during
closest
the viewing,
to family.
You said if that was one of your wives, then maybe. But not for your ex-girlfriend who's dating someone else.
Nope.
Especially when you just left the military compound.
Yeah,
You would even make it to the building.
Not even 10 hours ago, she showed up to your going away party with another dude. I would climb the 40th floor, but in terms of crossing the leaning building next to it, nah, bro, you're on your own.
See you when you get back, bro.
I'll wait here with a rope for when you return.
Really?
Yes.
They climbed 50 some odds.
57.
But, oof. Your betrothed, your wife, your woman, your bride. Yeah, let's do it. But your ex who brought a dude to your party. Nah, dude.
And sorry. Also might be dead.
Low
she
percentage.
Was dying hours ago when you last talked to her.
Even after the fact, low percentage.
Mm. Man, that's
sorry, bruh.
They also
real talk. Hashtag real talk with Rickety.
I'm thinking you're in lust here. But that's just me.
Well, as you said, also the set piece, at least where they cross over, is amazing.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Like top notch. That it just them, even them walking through the hallways of the tilted building was really awesome. Like I just thought that the whole thing played perfectly. And that had nothing to, or like you had very little monster even talk in that. Like there was very little relating to it until you see it from the top of the building, sort of like in the distance.
Yeah. So they find Beth and she's been impaled by some rebar and they get her out of there. And they're working their way down the building, and yeah, the monster returns and just starts destroying some shit. And some like stealth bombers fly above it, and they're dropping bombs.
Carpet bomb.
Yep. And helicopter finds him. They try to airlift him out of there. Gets knocked down.
Mm-hmm.
You think everybody's dead, but they're actually not dead. And then they die in about 5 minutes.
Yes.
So
yeah, with the camera.
Yeah, the camera is indestructible. Yeah,
the camera catches everything.
These are the moments where it really, they just don't give a shit anymore because it's like kind the final weird. 10 minutes, 5 minutes of the film. But they crash from a helicopter high above the skyscrapers.
Yes.
The camera is fine.
Very high.
Only the pilots die. Miller picks the camera up from the wreckage, checks on his hurt friends. They get out. He's still got the camera. He then gets eaten by the monster. Camera survives, falls to the ground.
Camera leaves the monster's mouth.
And then Rob runs over, picks up the camera
for some reason,
and then runs from the monster.
He comes over to say goodbye to his good friend Hud and all his funny quips.
So that's where it really kind of fell apart. Right
that there. Whole thing, I don't know. That's like that. I know that the movie falls apart story wise without when you just drop the camera and move on. But there is no reason that he should have run back for that camera. I guess we could chalk it up to him being an idiot, but that hasn't stopped him the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it's just for the last few minutes where he has a sweet moment with Beth underneath a bridge in Central Park, and they get bombed and die, but the camera lives on.
Hammer down protocol.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much
so,
the movie.
Yeah, that is the movie. Well, there's also, we didn't talk about this, they intersplice in footage from a previous day that
they go to Coney Island.
Beth and Rob.
Yeah.
Beth and Rob had together where they go to Coney Island. And they're like, we're having a fun time. Eating strawberries. It's very romantic. And then
an enormous bowl of strawberries, which no human being could consume in one sitting.
Way too much fiber.
Just run right through you.
I have a lot of fiber.
It's about the impact. When you have like rooms and houses and hotels and shit like these people live in, why not?
Yeah, that 20, early 20-something year old woman had this like 57th floor penthouse like apartment. Like,
she's apartment. A highly successful
no.
model.
No. No.
Overlooking Central
in Manhattan.
Park.
Yeah.
Overlooking with Central Park.
Trust fund.
Also.
And Native American.
Casino money? I don't know. Where are you going?
So
with
she
that?
Can afford it, okay?
Help me out here.
There's also. But Rob's apartment is dope as fuck, and he's leaving to take this job in Tokyo, and they talk about how much money he's going to make as if he's like, you know, just
struggling.
Living, yeah, he's living paycheck to paycheck in his fucking like his apartment is bigger than our house. Yeah. It has fucking graffiti walls and shit. It's nuts.
He just earned it like your average attractive white guy.
Yeah. He is not like it's I mean, amazing.
He's got a job in Tokyo.
It's amazing how far a nondescript white man can go in this country when they're being written into a movie about monsters. So
very successful.
He would have been disappointed by the size of the apartments in Tokyo.
Probably.
He better also be glad he ethic. Didn't make it.
Yeah,
a lot higher over there.
Death by harakiri.
In fact, this is random. I heard on the radio that Japan believes it'll be pretty much extinct in 1,000 years because the population is having so little sex.
Oh. I heard about that.
Men are working an average of 80 hours a week.
Jesus.
So they don't have time or energy to procreate.
I don't blame them.
Yeah, I understand.
The population is dwindling quickly. That's apparently insane. Within 1,000 years, they think the Japanese said that within 1,000 years they will be extinct.
Wow,
that's a bummer.
They need to loosen up.
They use too many odd sex toys over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I know. They got all the used panty vending machines in the world, but they're not going to make
all
babies
the masturbatory
for you.
Eggs.
That makes
you
a
can
lot more sense as far need. As pent up. Weird things
they
going on.
They need to quit wrapping
there.
It up and do it au naturel, huh?
Yeah, they don't have time to feel bad about fetishes over there. They just gotta do what they gotta do.
Finish for the country!
No, I mean, shit, I read this article about the work ethic over there and how, like, it's... And, like, there are action groups forming to fight a disease or whatever. I don't know what you call it. Where people are literally working until they die.
Yep. Yeah.
That's insane.
It's pretty crazy. Like, I would probably take a break.
Yeah, dude, fucking go smoke a cigarette. It's better for you than that shit.
Have a Pepsi.
Vape. Something.
Cloverfield.
Have sex.
Yeah, have sex. That's probably
get
the best.
Laid.
That's Camel good. Is cool.
No, it's not.
We here at Street Chilling are big smoking advocates.
Tobacco industry.
Thanks to our first big sponsor, Marlboro.
We're jumping ship from the creamery.
We got to go to some other stronger vice.
Ice cream to cigarette.
Justin's going to be reviewing a new cigarette every week.
Marlboro Man.
Very smooth.
Huffing and puffing.
Okay, seriously. Obesity is cool, but not cancer, okay? It's a guys. Joke. Take a joke, guys.
Everybody laugh with us.
Everybody
please.
Take a joke right now.
So smooth.
But yes. What were we talking about?
Horror movies.
We were doing something.
Well, speaking of the Japanese, they play an integral role in the
kaiju film, Birth of Godzilla.
Well, yes.
Bam.
I was
bringing it back.
I was going to say, like, there's a. This is different. Kind of. This I was gonna talk about.
Well, no, Bob, but yeah,
that's true.
That's a good one, Bob, but it's wrong.
No, anyway, but there's an integral like plot subplot thing or whatever that's involved with the alternate reality game, which nobody gives a shit about. But you know, one of the chief complaints I heard about this movie when it came out was that they don't explain what the monster is, nor do they. You know, you don't find out enough about the monster. Which I think is horseshit. I don't know about the rest of you guys. Like, this movie isn't about finding out what the monster is or whatever. But anyway, this alternate reality game they came up with kind of answers the question. And what it is there's a Japanese company that's like makes all sorts of shit that has been drilling stuff out of seabeds in the ocean, like in crevices, and making. Slush drinks out of it that are extremely popular called Slusho.
Yeah.
Yeah, which it became Slusho. Sort of a J.J. Abrams staple fake product. And them doing that, plus at one point in the film, you do see like a meteorite or something crash into the water at Coney Island.
I was told that was a satellite.
Yeah, I think that that's what it's out supposed of orbit. To be. I haven't looked it up in a while, but I think it was supposed to be like a satellite that or that crashes to Earth or, and sort of hit, like, I guess interacts somehow with the toxic materials that are being drilled in the ocean, and so a Cloverfield monster is birthed. That's so. Anyway, I just want to put that out there. I remember somebody, a mutual friend of ours, talking to us and being like, I hate that there's you have to like do this game in order to enjoy the movie. I was like, do you know how many people actually did this? I'm like probably one of five. It's my pedantic nerdiness that makes me do this, not the fucking movie.
Yeah, it's still enjoyable.
It's a marketing technique, buddy. Yeah. Like, you're going to not see a movie because it has a trailer?
Assholes.
Anyway.
So let's go ahead and get into our final words and ratings on this bad boy. Rickety, would you be so kind to start us off? How do you feel out of five on this?
I'm going to give it a 4-star. I think it is, for me, the epitome of the genre of definitely the handheld series. I like it way more than its predecessors, Paranormal and Blair Witch. I like the monster infusion aspect of it.
Sci-fi infusion?
Monster infusion.
Okay.
It has been tried again through various, you know, alien stuff. It didn't work out as well. The character aspect is pretty solid. I mean, it does kind of have the whole introduce douchebag dies kind of a, you know, trend to it. But I think with the, it was super original for the time with the character development. What's his face? Narrating it / help me out here.
TJ Miller.
Thank you. TJ.
HUD.
Running the show helps out a lot. It's well thought out, well produced. I think it's one of the greatest monster movies of his time, certainly of the last several years. It's in the top three every time. I love the monster. It's original. It's different. At the time, at least, we'd never seen anything like it. J.J. Abrams' movies since then have had similar kind of creative monster designs. But at the time, it was no one had ever seen anything like it. So I love it. I love the even though I think they attempt to create character attachment and stuff, I think they do succeed, but it's still not like, you know, intense. I think that it does have this kind of WB cast kind of a feel. But I love it. I think it's super original. It's a tragedy. Nobody lives. I kind of love that. It doesn't have a happy ending. 4 stars for me. Definitely highly recommend. I think it's a must-see for anybody who enjoys sci-fi, horror, action, whatever. So, definitely. 4 stars from Ross.
Right on. Drew, how do you feel out of five?
I'm going to give it 3. 3 out of 5. I was a little more favorable in my recommendation than I actually am about the movie overall, and I differ from, I think, all of you on how I feel about HUD, because he is what ruins this movie for me. And I do think TJ Miller is funny, and I think even the lines he says in Cloverfield out of context are funny, but to me he was really annoying because of the situation, because I know if I were one of the other people in there, I think I mentioned this when I brought up the movie before, maybe when we watched 10 Cloverfield Lane or Blair Witch or something, but like, I would have punched him in the face and thrown the camera to the side so that it breaks, although apparently I wouldn't be able to break this camera. But yeah, I really thought it didn't make sense that he would continue carrying that camera, or that his friends would allow him to continue carrying that camera throughout this entire endeavor. And I never really thought about it before, how stupid it was that he was going after the girl, that Rob was going after the girl. What was her name?
Beth.
Yeah. But it is kind of dumb.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I would have gone along with it had I been in that situation.
Probably not. No.
But I don't know. I mean, I give it, you know, a better than 50%, a 3 out of 5, because it is a solid production and I do like the monster. Mm-hmm. I agree with you, Rob, that it was kind of a happy medium with as far as not revealing and revealing the monster.
Yeah.
It was really surprising to me watching it the second time, you know, 8 years later, how little of the monster is in the movie. I guess for me, the most memorable parts were the monster, mm-hmm. and my memory of the movie had a lot more of the monster involved. And as the movie was going on, each time they showed the monster, I'm like, that's it? Really? I thought I remembered more, but I guess not.
Leaves an impact.
It does.
Yeah. Randy, how do you feel out of 5?
I think I'm going to do 3.5. Actually, as I talked a little bit, some of my, you know, some of the problems with this movie became more apparent to me as we discussed them. So, yeah, it's still a little bit of a flawed movie, but it really captured me, especially the first time I saw it and, like, all the stuff surrounding it. I don't know. I really like it. I think I'm not bothered by T.J. Miller, you know. I'm not pulled out of the movie by him at all. I think he does a great, like, I enjoy it. And I think he's really funny. And he's the only one that I actually felt like I kind of knew. Like, I don't know anything about Rob. Don't know a thing. Couldn't describe him to you.
Moving to Tokyo.
If I had to describe him in one word, I would say average. So average, I don't think that's a good thing. And Hud, I would describe as bumbling, good-natured buffoon. That's at least a few extra adjectives. So anyway, I like... The effects in this movie are what you really come for. Getting, I just always feel really engrossed by this movie. It's tough to really put into words, but all those problems that we brought up before kind of still stand for me. I don't really think that they needed to show as much of the monster as they did, and I think that it kind of took away some of my fear of it. It's, again, you know, pulling back the curtain a little too much. But I mean, it's a fantastic movie. It works as an adventure film for me. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm part of the action. It's like a Universal ride or something. I appreciate that. I always really like that sort of thing. So I don't know. I think 3.5 is fair. I don't have a whole lot to add to that, I think.
All right. Juice, how do you feel out of 5?
I'm going to give this a 3.5 stars. Some of the things we talked about that just kind of take you out, like the camera effects. I was surprised. I think this is the first time I've seen it all the way through since it came out in theaters, and I saw it then. And I was surprised at how, like, short it seemed, or how quickly it moved, I guess, for a trek, you know. I mean, the first 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes at least, is just party. Like, there's no monster involved. It's setting up these characters that really don't amount to much as far as personality wise. But I guess that's a motive. But then once they trek through the city, I mean, it freaking books. Like, I don't know what the time on this movie is, but it felt like it was less than an hour and a half to me. So it's really just a lot of style, and the style that they use it is great. But the effect too of the mystery monster, it's kind of like the carrot on the stick effect. You know, you want more, and then you get it, and you're like, oh, okay, that's what it was. You know, so it's a ploy that's effective for a time. But then you kind of get a little worn out with it, I guess, or I guess I do. But that is kind of the movie. It really is about this monster and stylistically having it romp through a city and you know, showing as little of it as possible, building the suspense that way. So it still holds up really well as a monster movie, great monster movie. But it does have its flaws. But I would, of course, still recommend you see it if you have not. So 3.5 stars.
All right. And just to answer your question, yeah, the runtime was an hour 25, so it's
okay,
a little under shorter, an hour and a half. Yeah. Shorter movie. But I kind of appreciate that. I feel like everything that was in it added, you know, they didn't waste a whole lot of time really anywhere. pretty tight. I don't have a whole lot to add. I'm gonna give this a 4 out of 5, which puts our aggregate at a 3.6. But I like the fact this movie had some really solid set pieces, like we mentioned earlier. The scene at the Brooklyn Bridge getting destroyed, the Statue of Liberty's head getting knocked off, the bit in the subway. They finally get to Central Park at the end with the one building leaning against the other, and they have to like crawl across the top of it. Really, really just visually impressive things going on here. When they show the monster, it still looks good today. I think it really holds up well. Although the monster, or I'm sorry, the characters are a little bit thin. There's not a whole lot to hang on there. And I totally understand Drew being bothered by TJ Miller. I just happen to think he's hilarious. I don't know. I could see being annoyed totally, because it's like a stressful film, and he's just so, he's kind of an idiot, but he, I don't know, I guess I just appreciate the levity. So it sort of adds a bit to the movie for me instead of taking anything away from it. So there's just like a couple detractors. Again, I think the amount that you see the monsters kind of perfect for me. I really like what they did. I didn't really think that they pulled the curtain back too much. But I mean, that's pretty much it, I suppose. 3.6 seems like a fair score for this movie. Rickety, will you do me the honors and let's go ahead and take a look at what Rotten Tomatoes has in store for the scores?
Absolutely.
Certified fresh to death.
As soon as I take down what I'm currently looking at.
Which is just headshots of TJ Miller, no doubt.
I was those deeply researching the size differences between the monsters in different movies.
Which you showed me a diagram, and I believe the Jaeger from Pacific Rim was the largest, I think. Yes.
Yeah. For the one that you saw.
You found bigger.
Yeah.
Everybody watch Pacific Rim.
Yes.
Do it now.
It is a Guillermo del Toro film. It's fantastic.
Yes. Also, those the kaiju in those, or in that movie anyway, they're making the second one now. They have similar like lice-like creatures to this movie in, yes, Cloverfield. I forget. I don't know if they have a specific name. I don't think they do, but I thought that was an interesting correlation.
Yeah, it's, he kind of talks about him a little bit. Bob and I love that movie.
It's fantastic.
I'm sure others do too. Thank you for stalling, Bob.
You're welcome.
Yes, Cloverfield. We, as usual, start with the critic review score. I believe Drew accidentally saw the score.
I did.
So we will bypass Drew.
Good luck.
On to Randy G. Landy. What do you think, brother?
For the critics, I feel like they would be kind of harsh on this. 60.
Okay.
Go 75.
I'm going to go 80.
Justin takes it with 75. The score is 77.
Oh.
Okay. Critics gave it a 77% fresh score.
Ooh.
All right.
Yeah. Pretty good.
I would tend to agree. Next up, the user score, of course, here at Straight Chilling Enterprises. We always fight for the user.
The enterprise? The users.
It's an enterprises now. Inc. Incorporated, whatever you will.
Sci-fi. LLC,
we're everywhere.
Industries.
Limited liability.
We
limited.
Have business cards.
We're here at the board of Straight Chilling. Drew, what'd you think, brother? Users.
I'm going to go with 82.
This is our conference table.
I'm going to go with a 75.
Shit. No. 70.
86.
Justin takes it again with a 70. The score is 68.
Damn.
Nice. I would have gone probably closer to 75.
You were two off both times. Well, 2 percentage points.
Well, all right.
You failed.
The consensus is Project crossed with Godzilla. Cloverfield is economically paced, stylistically clever, and filled with scares.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, solid.
Agree.
Yeah, the pacing actually is a good thing to...
It's quick.
Yeah. It just moved. Like, I was like,
by the time they got to the tunnel scene, I was like, man, I thought this was like toward the end of the film. And then I was like, oh, it is toward the end of the film. Like, it's quick, here, but here we are.
It's measured, too. Like, they, I don't know. I don't think they put too much on the viewer at one time either.
Like, yeah. It just kind of scoots along.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, let's go ahead and check out some trivia for this movie.
It's totally time for trivia.
Randy, will you do me the honors?
Sure.
Thank you.
There's plenty that you could bring up about this movie. A lot of things that have less to do with the movie and more to do with the alternate reality bullshit. But I'm going to steer clear of some of that stuff. One thing which I think is pretty well known at this point, our character HUD, who is the camera operator, he is called that because it's like an industry term for a heads-up display. Or basically, like what you look at as things are being filmed, live filmed. So, that's one thing. Kind of makes sense, I guess.
That's kind of cool.
It's a camera terminology thing. Yeah, makes sense. So, I mean, which makes a whole lot more sense than somebody actually being named HUD. let's see. I guess I'm going to go into some of the stuff. There's too much stuff here that I could just gloss over. But so basically, like, this alternate reality game reveals a few things. This slusho thing, this seabed nectar or whatever it is that they're drilling, and that there's some sort of satellite or something in the end of this film that you can see crash into the ocean. So we know about those things, and we know that... Rob apparently was going to work for Slusho in Tokyo. Like, that's something that was supposed to be in there. And there's a like, it's tied in really, really, really closely with all this stuff. But it's not like at all essential to the movie, which I find to be kind of interesting. It's an interesting way of approaching your marketing. There's a Slusho t-shirt in the show, or in the movie. Jason, who is the brother of Rob, he's wearing a Slusho t-shirt. In an interview, the director says he left a clue as to where the monster came from at the end of the movie, where the camera's overlooking the ocean. A missile-shaped object can be seen in the right corner of the screen hitting the water. He said that the sequel would clarify more on what that means. It didn't.
Nope.
Kind of.
Well, it's not really a sequel.
What did it...
It clarified that it's alien.
No, it didn't, though.
No.
It could be a satellite.
Yeah, I assumed it was...
It could be a missile.
More proof that it was a satellite. Because Goodman's character like worked on satellites and he seemed to have like a lot of knowledge about these aliens.
I mean, yeah, you could make that leap, but it doesn't definitively say anything.
Sure, yeah.
It's all very teasery.
I thought it was just part of the whole alien plot point of them dropping them over major cities. Because he said there's a big thing, but they're in Louisiana, so there's no way they're seeing anything in the sky happening from New York. Yeah. So it's obviously kind of like an Independence Day type ploy is the way Goodman kind of describes it. Oh, they're going to hit all the major cities and then do sweeps for any kind of survivors out in this, sticks.
That relies on you trusting Howard as a narrator, and you can't fully trust Howard.
Well, you can't until everything that he says is true.
Not everything he says is true.
Well, I mean, about the situation, about the specific situation. The only thing you find out that he really lies about is the girl, kind of specifically down there. But everything supposedly that he says about,
He says that the air isn't breathable. He says that you can't live out there.
Yeah, at first it is. That woman has all the shit on her face and bangs her head up against the wall and dies because of the air up there. And it dissipates because that was like an initial
attack.
People are
driving around. Anyway, we can get into that for a
while. They're gassing people.
Yeah.
Gas truck,
but it like dissipates. Yeah. So he was right.
I don't know. I have trouble believing Howard is fully right about anything. He's part right about things, obviously. Yeah. But anyway, it doesn't matter. All that stuff is so oblique, and I think is so loosely tied into that other movie that it doesn't really hold any weight with this one.
Side straight chilling episode number 68, maybe?
Yeah, really.
Maybe. That's a guess. Scroll down a bit. You'll find
Cloverfield.
Okay, here's something. After the people flying in the helicopter get swatted down by the monster, during the second period of time when they hit the ground and the camera seems to skip, pay close attention to the static. You will see a few frames as the two characters on the Ferris wheel, which is, you know, just kind of like obvious. They're just kind of cutting between the things. But you also can see a shot of King Kong from the old King Kong movie. there's a few of these like stills, like single frame stills mixed into this movie. I saw another one. I think
that's weird.
The movie Them, and I think the original Godzilla has a frame in this movie. So they kind of snuck in some homages in there. Now, one thing that Cracked.com brought up was in the poster for this movie, which didn't even have a name back when it was being teased. It was just the headless Statue of Liberty and some smoke. In the smoke, if you look closely at it, and we can post a link to this or whatever, but there, if you put the... This is hard to describe. If you flip the poster on itself over... it kind of, there's like a, the head of the monster is visible in the smoke, which I think is maybe bullshit.
That's
what they're claiming, and I'm looking at it, and I can see why they might think that, because, I don't know. I mean, Justin, you take a look at this. Tell me what you think of that. You think that that's bullshit?
Head of smoke monster.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's probably bullshit, but it plays just enough, just close enough to where you're not sure. And this is, of all movies in the world, maybe the most Easter eggy movie of all time.
It's obscure beyond belief.
Easter eggy.
It's like, why? Like,
yeah,
it gives itself a little too much mystique. Credit. Yeah. Like, oh, it's hidden. It's like, nobody gives a shit.
Come on, JJ.
I don't care.
Anyway, so, yeah, I mean, I could go on. A lot of this is just so much of the alternate reality game type stuff that I feel like it's going to bore people. So,
all right.
Let's move on.
Well, let's go ahead and get into some news for the week.
Extra, extra. Read all about it.
All right, guys. A few things I wanted to mention. The first of which... is unfortunate news, but the director Herschel Gordon Lewis, he passed away this past Monday, September 26, 2016. He was known as the godfather of gore. He basically created the splatter subgenre of horror films. I don't know, I actually haven't like seen any of his movies, but he did like the Gore Gore Girls and the Blood Feast trilogy, things like that. Pretty much, if it wasn't for him, splatter movies wouldn't exist. It's something that I've been meaning to check out, except for the fact that I'm just not super into like gore for gore's sake, and I think that's sort of what he is known for. Have any of you guys seen a Herschel Gordon Lewis film? Are you familiar with any of it?
Not that I'm aware of.
Neither I.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it's time.
Yeah, it is. He's another Pittsburgh director, much like Mr. Romero, but I feel like maybe we should have a look at one of his movies on the show just to pay some homage to him. It seems like he was super influential. Blood Feast, 2000 Maniacs, Monsters Go Go, Taste of Blood. And he's also got... There was a movie that was supposed to be coming out. I'm trying to find the name of it. It's supposed to come out, I think, last year, but it never did. It was like his most recent movie. I listened to an interview with him, and he was talking about it. I think it was called, like, Gore Mania. I'm going to see if I can find the name of it. I can't remember.
It's a great title.
Yeah, it... none of these titles were, like... amazing by any means, but he, in the interview I listened to, he was talking about he obviously made splatter movies before splatter movies were a thing, and he wanted to like make movies that either no one could make or no one wanted to make, and basically he did them super on the cheap, and then he marketed his movies to drive-in movie theaters, and he just undercut any sort of like big budget film so that they would show his movies for, you know, half the time, and they would pay a quarter of the amount they would pay. And then eventually these like, you know, movie studios caught on to what he was doing, and they started producing splatter films and like charging less. And then it sort of like ran him out of a job essentially. But he had a lot to add to the B-movie subgenre. I'm still trying to find that movie title. IMDb.
Yeah, let it go, Bob. Yeah, let it go.
I think we're really on point tonight. Overall.
I think so, too.
Cut all of this.
I could probably cut my whole trivia section and it wouldn't be a big loss.
That is not even going to happen, Randy. Anyways.
I wish that it would.
It doesn't matter. The movie isn't out. No release date. Supposed to come out last year. Anyways, Herschel Gordon Lewis. Basically, we're going to have to watch some of his movies. That's what I've learned here tonight. The next thing I wanted to mention, Mike Flanagan is supposed to be directing a Netflix original film that's based off of the Stephen King novel Gerald's Game. Are you guys familiar with Gerald's Game at all?
Gerald's Game.
No.
Well, let me tell you the little bit I know about Gerald's Game. I've never read it. Apparently, there's this fellow and his lady friend. They retire to a cabin in the woods for a weekend filled with sex, essentially, as far as I understand. And whoa. I guess, yeah, I know.
PG-13, Bob.
No, don't let your kids listen to our show, please. But he ties his woman friend down to the bed, and they're doing what have you, and I guess he has a heart attack and dies, and she cannot free herself, and I guess the story takes place largely in her mind. She starts hallucinating, and she doesn't know what's real and what's not, and I guess she's just tormented by these terrible visions, allegedly, and that's really the entire book. But I mean, Mike Flanagan most recently directed Oculus, Hush, and Absentia. I think most of his stuff is still on Netflix if you haven't seen it. We covered Oculus. We haven't covered Hush. I know Randy and I have seen Hush. It was pretty cool, actually. I recommend you check it out. Yeah,
I actually liked Oculus a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't seen Absentia, but he seems like a very competent director, and I would like to see what I mean. A lot, basically, those Oculus and Hush are essentially films that take place more or less in one room, which it sounds like Gerald's Game would be a similar thing.
So that's coming out as a film? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a wow. Netflix original. They hired him to make this movie for Netflix, basically.
I wonder how they're going to approach that.
I don't know, because it sounds like really dark, but I mean, I guess Netflix could get away with literally whatever they want, you know? But
and I guess technically that as a movie, they couldn't stay in that room the whole movie, could they?
Yeah, I
especially
think
if she's hallucinating and stuff. Like, it sounds like she's at least cognitively traveling.
Yeah, that's true. I guess her mind could end up being wherever. I don't know.
It sounds like a pretty fucked up thing.
Yeah, it does. I'm into it. I like Mike Flanagan. I like what I've seen, anyways.
Sounds like one of the more relatively obscure Stephen King novels from 1992 or whatever that's getting a movie title.
Yeah.
And we'll see. Don't get me wrong. I loved Oculus. I did. But I'm not convinced this will be superb. We'll see, though. We'll see.
Yeah.
I like to give it a shot based on his pedigree, for sure.
After watching Hush.
I'll give a shot at the trailer.
Oh.
And then we'll see.
There's many gates of approval to get through.
Impress me, Flanagan. Do
it
now.
Once you guys buy it, I'll watch it.
You should just watch Hush. We will recommend that.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix. I could do that.
Hush is pretty cool.
And see what you think about watching another movie by that person.
Yeah.
I'm good with Oculus. That was really good.
Yeah, I enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, it was cool. The next thing I wanted to mention, the last thing, I made you guys watch a trailer for a movie that's coming out in 2017. It's called Death House. One thing I didn't mention is actually the original script was penned by Gunnar Hansen before he passed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The sort of interesting thing about this movie is they're bringing in a lot of big names in horror, like your Kane Hodders and your Barbara Cramptons and whatnot.
Kane Hodder. Oh, it's late.
Yeah, I know, man. But the plot basically says, during an exclusive tour, a power breakdown inside a secret prison known as the Death House sends two agents fighting through a labyrinth of horrors while being pursued by a ruthless army. And then you've got, various, like I said, Adrian Barbeau's in it, Sid Haig, Bill Moseley, Tony Todd, Dee Wallace, Kane Hodder, et cetera, et cetera. They're all in it. All the people that you might know. How did you guys feel about this trailer? Is it something that would excite you to have all these horror names? Did it, how'd you feel? Rickety, you super stoked about Death House?
Is this the trailer we watched that we didn't really know?
Yeah, it looked,
what was, going on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much.
You should not have asked me. It was confusing. It looked like a horror thing. I couldn't really tell what was going on. I got nothing of what you just said.
It's probably one of the worst trailers I have ever seen.
I got nothing of what you just said from that video. So based on that, I guess it could be fun, but the trailer was immensely confusing. So.
It was really bad.
I didn't even know you were talking about the same thing we watched for most of that.
Welcome to the podcast, Regan.
Literally, while you were talking about it, I was like, what is...
No.
Did we watch that? What is he talking about?
That's totally fair, because that is extremely confusing video that you showed us, to the point where I'm not convinced that it's an actual trailer and not just the wrong video.
Yeah, or the same thing. Yeah, are you sure?
Rob queued it up wrong.
I don't think I'd... Why is everyone mad at me?
We're not mad. We just doubt.
That's trailer. Tough to even comment on it because we don't understand what we watched.
I think you're all wrong.
It didn't even have a green screen. Rob,
why don't you tell us what you feel?
If that was the trailer for what you're describing, it looks cheap as fuck then, because if they can't even afford to put together reasonable trailer that makes any somewhat of sense.
I'm going to tell you, I will rewatch this trailer in a quiet setting. I will rewatch it, and I will post about what I think of it on the Straight Chilling group or whatever. But from what I saw, it does, it just looks like three completely separate things got mashed together in a fucking pie.
That is what it looks like.
It's not cohesive in the least. It didn't even, did it show a title? Did it show a release date?
No.
I don't think it showed any of that shit.
I don't think it has a definite date. Wow. I just know 2017.
It was literally just a series of images, and some people said a few things.
Yeah, some voiceovers,
but
maybe.
But none of it really correlated to anything else that anybody else was saying. So, as far as I know, it is a stock footage website.
So you're excited about it?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I needed to hear. No, yeah, it looks not very great, unfortunately.
No.
Sorry, Gunner. Your script got shat on.
Well, we don't know that yet. That's just a trailer, in fairness.
Yeah, well...
I will look maybe a bit further. Maybe it's just a gnarly sort of miscalculation on the trailer, but I mean, because those pedigrees they're pretty good. I mean, that's a lot of names that we can recognize and might be cool to see together.
Maybe it might be like
the Expendables 12 or something.
That's what it sounds like. The Expendables, which is just like name recognition, but I feel like, you know, horror wise, they're not going to have a budget to lean on, so it's going to be, you know, like the trailer, kind of shitty and. Yeah. Just names. I mean,
yeah. It's looking pretty grim and not in the way they want it to.
Nah. Anyway, everybody look forward to Death House 2017.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. But that's it. That's it for the news. We'll be back next week with a fresh new episode. It's Randy's pick, and I believe we're doing Over the Garden Wall. Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Over the Garden Wall?
That sounds good.
All right. Yeah, it's going to be something a little different for us. It's going to be our first animated thing we're covering, and it's also going to be the second series that we're covering. It's a Cartoon Network original. I know Randy and I both found a cheap copy of it on Amazon. I don't know if you can stream it anywhere necessarily.
Amazon, I think.
Yeah. So definitely check it out. It is worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go. Spoiler alert, I recommend it.
It's worth it. Yeah.
Also, it is not really we're a horror movie podcast. It is not a movie, nor is it truly horror.
Yeah.
It's creepy for kids, and it's definitely in a Halloween sort of vein.
Very much a Halloween show.
That's my reasons for going for it, and, you know, you if you disagree with me.
Yeah, it's like a fairy tale Halloween cartoon series. It's It's pretty great.
It's a mini series, so it's a single season, and all the episodes together are about what did we say, an hour and 10 minutes? I'm sorry, an hour and 50 minutes.
Hour 50, yeah.
So just under 2 hours, so it really does kind of play like a movie.
Yeah.
In some respects. So
anyways, until next week, please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at str8_chilling, and we are on Instagram at straightchillingpodcast. And of course, please visit our brand new website, straightchilling.
Oh my God, we're a fucking mess tonight.
straightchillingpodcast.com. And until next week, everybody please, as always, keep chilling.
We're drunk!